My fellow Americans, I pose this simple question to you. Are you better off now than you were when this disappointing show began?
The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Carter Silver Studio. Welcome to our top stories this hour. Man, so much madness going on in the world. Still can't believe that Sawant finally verbalizing what I've been telling you about her for 5 years. Played the soundbite yesterday, played it earlier today, that nobody else is picking up on an elected official saying we want to overturn your form of government. It is unbelievable. Not that she's saying that, but that it's getting no coverage. I just cannot believe that, you know, people just say, oh, crazy Sawant. Because Ilhan Omar, the Minneapolis congresswoman, she's saying the exact same thing as Sawant saying.
As long as our economy and political systems prioritize profit without considering who is profiting, who is being shut out, we will perpetuate this inequality. So we cannot stop at criminal justice system. We must begin the work of dismantling the whole system of oppression wherever we find it.
Dismantling our government. And she wants to, you know, defund all police as well. But it's like they're operating from the exact same script.
The tax will fund massive amounts of affordable housing every year. While the affordable housing has to be built. Who will build it? We're going to have thousands of workers who will get living wage jobs. And who will benefit? It's going to be the community around them, including local businesses.
That's not the Sawant I want to play.
I have a message for Jeff Bezos and his class. If you attempt again to overturn the Amazon tax, working people will go all out in the thousands to defeat you. And we will not stop there. Because you see, we are fighting for far more than this tax. We are preparing the ground for a different kind of society. And if you, Jeff Bezos, want to drive that process forward by lashing out against us in our modest demands, then so be it. Because we are coming for you and your rotten system. We are coming to dismantle this deeply oppressive, racist, sexist, violent, utterly bankrupt system of capitalism, this police state. We cannot and will not stop until we overthrow it and replace it with a world based instead on solidarity, genuine democracy, and equality. A socialist world.
A socialist world, which to her is a Marxist world, because that's what socialist alternative is about. But I like that. They're modest demands, $250 million a year from businesses, from the job creators, the tax providers. That's a modest demand in her view. But they want to dismantle our society. And again, I'll ask the question. 10 years ago, when you were in India, you presumably could have gone anywhere in the world. Why did you come to a place you despise? Why did you come to a place that was so violent and racist and sexist? And say, but I'm going to change what America is. I'm going to dismantle America. Why didn't you go any place in the world that wasn't so violent and racist and sexist? Why would you go to a country you hate with every fiber of your being? So I just want people to be aware. Since her words, which sound seditious to me, but when her words have gotten scant attention, but you better be aware, because this is, you know, Ilhan Omar saying the same thing at the national level, and this is a cancer that is beginning to metastasize in our city, our region, our nation. And we better do something about it. What I mean by that is you got to vote people like that out, and you have to thoroughly discredit them. You have to thoroughly reject people who say that they want to destroy what America is. So just your reminder, I'm going to keep reminding you about the Sawant thing and her own words, because it just validates everything I've said for 5 years when people thought I was engaging in hyperbole about her. With that as a mere prelude, let's get right to the big lead.
The big lead. I sense a Dory rant coming on.
Well, the anti-cop mentality has hit another absolutely ridiculous level. And there are so many great cops who have done nothing to deserve all of the hatred, but 9 out of 9 city council members despise our police and our police department. Jenny Durkin allowed domestic terrorists to take over the East Precinct. In the business community, they've decided so that they can be appropriately woke, that hating on police is a way to do it, apparently. I know a place, I remember there was a warm summer night. I had a convertible several years ago. And one of my daughters and I, we just said, hey, let's just go out for a summer evening drive. And we drove into the city and went to Molly Moon's ice cream. Man, I would never do that again. There's a sign up in the window of the Molly Moon's on Capitol Hill, close to the East Precinct. And it reads as follows. Police officers, Molly Moon's is a gun-free zone. Please do not come inside if you are wearing a firearm. Well, cops are armed. And so they're going to apparently say, deny business to cops on the job. This is so ridiculous on so many levels, but let's start at the most insane level. Would you want your kid working at Molly Moon's? And let's play this out. There's an armed robbery at a Molly Moon's. You know, God forbid. But there's an armed robbery, gun pointed at the 18-year-old behind the counter. And a cop walks by. What does he do? Sign on the door says you can't come in, officer. You know, again, heaven forbid. What if some maniac walks in and wants to sexually assault somebody who works there? Is the cop supposed to walk by as ordered by Molly Moon's? Or should he go in with his gun drawn and intervene? Now, the other reason this is so ridiculous is, you know, when Seattle wanted to put the parks as gun-free zones. And, of course, the state Supreme Court overturned that because it was so patently unconstitutional. But the reason it was not just unconstitutional but insane is criminals, I don't know if you know this, criminals don't tend to follow sign orders. And so when you say, we're a gun-free zone, cops, stay away. The only guns you're keeping out are from the legal, the law-abiding, to an armed criminal, you know, dozens of whom you had roaming around your neighborhood just a week and a half ago. You have two murders, one of whom executed a 16-year-old child, point blank, executed him, who's still on the loose because those two murders of those two teenagers haven't been solved. They both happened within a couple of blocks of Molly Moon's. Do you think if those criminals walk in, guns drawn, are thinking about it, and they see the, hey, Steve, this is a gun-free zone. We better rob the business next door. We're not allowed to go into Molly Moon's. It's so stupid. It is like a second grade level of reasoning when you put up a sign like that. And I know the strategy. It's, okay, everybody's hating on cops. And maybe if we put up a sign in our window that says we hate cops, people will get an extra scoop. The woke crowd will get an extra scoop when they come in. I'm so tired of our police, of all of the wonderful men and women of law enforcement, all these people who have suffered so much abuse, projectiles thrown at them, bleep the police, screamed in their face for hours on end. City council, government that despises them. Let's get rid of them. Let's turn the whole region into CHOP. Murder, graffiti, heroin, street gangs everywhere. A full police-free Puget Sound region. That's the vision. So you can make up your own minds about Molly Moons. But I've made up my mind, and never again will I go with one of my kids on a summer night for a scoop there, because this anti-cop rhetoric, hatred, playing games, using police to try to boost your cred, it's really tiresome. And Molly Moon should be ashamed of itself for having that sign in its window. Up next in the Big Lead.
The Big Lead, Bizarro World.
I asked listeners a couple of hours ago, do you want your kids back in school? Because the president has said he might even withhold funding from schools that don't reopen in the fall. There's a huge debate about whether schools in our state should. And I will tell you, at least 90% of the texters said, yes, we want our kid back in school this fall. You have come to realize from the data that your kid is at almost zero risk from coronavirus, that while the number of cases is rising, the death rate is dropping or plateauing, and hopefully we won't see a spike in the next 10 days. But people have said the downside damage of not getting any education, and it's official that the attempt at online education was an absolute joke. It was horribly executed. They knew for weeks that they were going to shut down the schools before they did, and they were so completely unprepared. And it's kids who, you know, a tiny percentage of them were even participating on a daily basis. And I'm sure many of those would log in and then just sit on their phone and text while they, you know, were pretending to be looking at some lesson plan, because there was no consequence of failure in all of this. I want to point out, because this has come back up on a national level, and a lot of people asked me, is this true? Because last night, Tucker Carlson on Fox News, he said in Washington State, they are thinking of reopening schools based on race. And I talked about this, I think it was about almost a month ago, when the state superintendent of public instruction put out their document for reopening schools. And it's available on the k12.wa.us website. But one of the things, and after Tucker Carlson said that, I just got so many messages from listeners who said, is this true? Is our state thinking about reopening schools based on race? That can't be true. And everybody thought, well, Tucker Carlson got some bad info. No, it's true. It's absolutely 100% true as a possibility that they have put out there. But it's on page 32. Of their reopening schools planning document. And it's under the category key characteristics implementation examples, because they said some school facilities would open for some groups of students while others remain closed or certain community characteristics are met. But here's one of their implementation examples. Serve, it's called phase in by priority. Serve students furthest from educational justice first, including students with disabilities, English learners, students experiencing homelessness, students experiencing poverty, students of color, and other student groups. So, according to the superintendent of public instruction in our state, they are considering reopening the schools to kids who have English as a second language, to students of color, to homeless kids, to kids who are in poverty. But what they said at the beginning of that header, phase in by priority. How does that feel? If you're paying thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars a year in taxes to our schools, if you're not in one of those categories, let's say you're not a student experiencing, you don't have a kid experiencing poverty, but you're middle class family, you work hard, you've just attained middle class status. Your kid's not a priority. If your kid is white, your kid is not a priority. And how can an entire state school system declare that some kids are not a priority? Shouldn't every kid be of equal priority? Shouldn't every kid, regardless of the color of their skin, be treated the same by our educational system? It's an effort, continuous effort to divide. And my own counterbalancing thing, because I think we should reopen the schools and get the kids back in. But this has become such a radical leftist agenda to divide us. You know, I worked in a public school for many, many years. And it was not just my job, but it was my pleasure, my honor, my human responsibility to treat every kid the same, regardless of what other, you know, characteristics. That's how you build team and community and make the whole greater than the sum of the parts. But there's this continuous effort to divide, and you're part of a group. You're not an individual. You're part of a group. And this group should hate that group because that group has something this group does, or that group doesn't have something this group does have, and you should all just hate each other for it. I don't like our schools saying that some kids are not a priority. You know, we all pay the same taxes. We all deserve the same education. So, yes, part of the possible plan that is being considered is to reopen schools based on race or income or other characteristics that kids have no control over. But hey, kids, according to our public schools, sorry, a lot of you just aren't a priority. And that is your big lead this hour.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
Check the news for you, and then, in case you missed it, I had an exclusive interview with Mary Kay Letourneau's attorney, David Gerke, a couple of hours ago. Some really interesting stuff. He's an old friend of the show. And also, what the city of Seattle is doing to divide its employees. Get you up to speed on both those stories coming up next as the Dory Monson Show rolls on. Hey, Nicole. I didn't think I've talked to you all day today.
Well, we talked a little bit about The Little Mermaid.
Oh, that's right.
Am I on now? No.
Yeah, you were on. I heard you. Did you see the picture I tweeted out last night?
No, I don't think I did.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, so about, 8:30, 9 o'clock, two huge bucks
Oh, yes, I did see that.
Mm-hmm. With, and you can only see one in the picture because the other one, my wife was trimming a roadie yesterday afternoon, and two big bucks walked into my backyard and started eating off the plants. And it was so gorgeous. And I just have to share because my Twitter people are so funny. And, you know, like Matt Gilbert's always awesome. He always has great, funny stuff. But what I wrote when I sent out the picture, and you can always follow me at Dory Monson. It's my personal Twitter account, at Dory Monson, D-O-R-I-M-O-N-S-O-N. But I wrote, big, gorgeous buck having a backyard snack right now. He knows nothing about COVID or CHOP or Trump versus Biden. All he knows is how to look gorgeous and lean and cool. Kind of like me at 17, except for the gorgeous and cool part. I want to be a young buck again. So that was my little caption for the photo. And one of my repliers said, your tweet kind of sounds like a Bob Seger song. I thought that was a really funny response. I literally LOL'd when I saw that. It was good. And then a couple people, disgustingly, I guess hunting season's in September, and they asked if they could get my address in September. I thought that was disgusting. These are gorgeous, beautiful creatures, and I would never harm them.
There was a few at my parents, too, and I think that the rabbits and the deer are really thriving due to less people on the roads, you know?
Yeah, well, I told you a few months ago, Buddy got a rabbit. And yeah, now that he's tasted the blood, he will never be satiated.
Ugh.
I know. Because I like my rabbit medium, not rare. Okay, with that as a mere prelude, I want to recap for you. We did have an exclusive interview a couple of hours ago. Mary Kay Letourneau, who achieved international notoriety when she, as a school teacher here locally, married, had kids, and she, at age 33, started having sex with a 12-year-old student, Vili Fula. And it was a story we covered extensively. And I got to know her attorney, David Gerke, very well when the story first broke back in 97. I couldn't believe it was 23 years ago. But David came on with us in our noon hour today. You can always check out the podcast. But he told us that even though they got divorced just a year or two ago, that Mary Letourneau and Vili Fula, they were still very close. And he was with her right at the very end. They were still close right up until the end. Is that right?
That is correct. And they both grew up a lot, if you will, over the last couple of decades and didn't always see eye to eye. But the love between them, it was always there, strong. And Vili, to his credit, when he found out about it, and then especially the last couple of months, he moved back from California and he gave her 24/7 care, literally all the way to the end.
And even though they were divorced, they stayed close. And that was something that David and I, you know, in a friendly sort of way, but we argued about when the story was first breaking, because I thought she was just a child rapist. And he said, yeah, she is. And the law should treat her as such. But he always told me then and now that it was a little different from some others. You always had a very different perspective on that relationship. Has that changed at all over the years?
No. And I'll refresh your memory. I said Mary's case was different, and I had known Mary for a couple of years. I had known her children, and that's what made it different. I agreed that there should not be some sort of a self-defense argument of, well, they were in love. Whether they were or not, you cannot change the law to allow that, because a good groomer will have the victim in love with them just to get laid. But in Mary's case, I do firmly believe that it's love. And I think the decades-long loving relationship up to the very end sort of shows that this was that one exception. And again, you can't have an exception in the law or as bad as things are in the world, it'd be horrendous if you start and say, well, just, you know, if she says she loved you, we'll let it go. No. Right. But she persevered. I always argued with her. I never told her it couldn't be love. But what I told her is, Mary, you were the adult, and the law says you have to remain an adult until he is. You can't be breaking the law just because of love. And she finally understood that. She never agreed with it because they were in love. But she understood that there had to be. And then as her daughters got older, we would argue once in a while, and I'd just say, what if it was your daughter? Well, that would be different. And I said, well, okay, I rest my case.
And then he gave me some insights as to what he believes, why this whole thing happened in the first, you know, a 33-year-old teacher and a 12-year-old boy. Was there just something going on that was well off with her?
I've said this, and she knows I've said it, and she does not like me to say it. Right when this case was breaking, I got two phone calls. One was a retired Department of Correction psychologist. The other was a dentist. The psychologist said something happened to her in her childhood about the same age that Billy is now, and it derailed her. It's like you're driving from New York to L.A. and you have a problem in Pennsylvania and you go the wrong direction, and that's why she's acting this way. And then I had a dentist who called. It had happened with his daughter, very similar circumstances, and they discovered she was bipolar. And when you're in the manic phase, you act recklessly, whether it's financially or undertaking projects that you have no hope of completing, sexually, things like that. And yeah. Mary had a couple of setbacks in her life. And so when you say, was she squirrely, she was suffering from this. And I think that kept her from being the adult.
David Gerke, he was on with us in the noon hour. You can check out the podcast to hear the entire interview. Also in that noon hour, Christopher Rufo, community activist, watchdog, editor of City Journal. He got some documents from the city of Seattle. They had a seminar for their white employees. It was on how to undo your whiteness. It might be the most racist documents I've ever seen from a government, and that's what the city of Seattle is pushing out these
days. They said, we'll examine our complicity in the system of white supremacy, how we internalize and reinforce it, and begin to cultivate practices that enable us to interrupt racism in ways to be accountable to BIPOC folks within our community. I mean, it would take me about a half hour to figure out what that sentence even means.
Yeah, I'm in the kind of unenviable position that I've been exposed to this stuff for so long, I can kind of parse it. It's almost a foreign language. But what they're basically done with this training session, you see that they've reduced the world to two essential forces. There's the kind of essential category of blackness, and then there's the essential category of whiteness. And it really is almost like a new metaphysics. They're basically saying this is the new science of good and evil. And it's up to the white employees at the city of Seattle to essentially atone for their sins, to work through their feelings of guilt and complicity in white supremacy. And it sets up an impossible task, because at one time, they never really explain what is racist behavior, what are the racist attitudes that you want to prevent. It's really just this all-encompassing, pervasive kind of metaphysics of whiteness that you are stuck with for your entire life. And what I think is very interesting is that the training, as you see it laid out in the documentation, is really kind of a point by point kind of induction into this cult of social justice and racial activism. And I think it's astonishing, and it would be really scandalizing to most people to know that their taxpayer dollars are going to fund this kind of toxic ideology.
Yeah, City of Seattle essentially says if you're white, you are a racist. It is the most racist thing I've seen. Okay, you can hear both those interviews. Check out our podcast as soon as we're off the air, mynorthwest.com. Awesome audio next. Yes, and let's indeed get to our favorite sound bites of the day.
This is Dory Monson's Awesome Audio. Clips of the day.
And let me give credit where credit is due. Tomorrow morning on Todd Herman's show on 770 KTTH, he has an exclusive interview, and they were nice enough to share a couple of preview cuts with us. But this is a guy, and he lives in the area here, and he planted some flowers in his garden in the shape of the letters M-A-G-A. And apparently somebody saw the MAGA flowers and just became filled with rage, posted the pictures on a Facebook group that had thousands of people. They doxed this guy. Somebody just drove over the flower bed. They threw a flashbang at his house. It is crazy. It's absolutely crazy. And the whole interview will be on Todd Herman's show tomorrow morning. But this is Jed, the homeowner, who described some of the violence just because they had flowers in the shape of MAGA.
They saw me leave the house. They made a U-turn and drove right over my flower bed. Now, that guy's license plate was a little bit harder to read, but we have identified him, and he's also going to be charged.
And they've, again, thousands of people, they've doxed him, trying to get violence inflicted on him for having MAGA flowers.
She threw her hands on her head. She was obviously triggered by our flowers. And within another 24 hours, she had posted a picture of our garden with identifying information, the street name, which is not a very long street, and also a description of the house so that people could easily identify it. Her post indicated that she wasn't sure if it was legal or not, and she understood posting things on our own property. But when it came to public property, this really made her flip her lid.
Yeah, and again, there's people all around the region who have Black Lives Matter signs, and they're not greeted with rage. But, man, you have flowers in the shape of M-A-G-A. It is just unhinged.
So the final incident happened just right before 4th of July. We're sitting there just about midnight, and a car turns around, and they threw a flashbang, a Class G explosive, at our front door. So this is really, it's escalated. It's gotten to the point of what I would refer to as domestic terrorism. I don't think things are going to stop happening.
No, because you get away with being domestic terrorists around here. There is a mandated groupthink that government is a part of now. And if you dare stray, they will come and get you. How have I stayed on the air, for crying out loud? The entire interview with that homeowner is going to be on Todd Herman's show tomorrow morning. He's on from 6 to 9 a.m. on 770 KTTH. And thanks to Todd and his producer, Alex, for sharing those preview cuts with us. So check out that entire interview tomorrow morning. That's it. Tom and Curly are coming up next. And I'll see you back here tomorrow. High noon. Hello.
Go on. Leave. Get out. Next.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You're really a fantastic audience.